this building or rescuing that politician, another story would pull America's interest a few days later. Unlike sports stars, whose brand could spread across the country, most people were only interested in their local heroes.
"Do you want to make your wedding fuego?"
asked Señora Fuego, holding a concrete block and standing in front of a bride and groom. Her skin turned neon orange and the block melted in her hands.
"Then come to Grand Regal Hall in Howard Beach."
Cup's superheroes did travel when necessary, but not often. And when they did, they knew better than to try to steal the spotlight from locals. When the vicious architect tried to level downtown Denver, Cup flew King Tiger out to assist Hail Storm, and only to assist. No one there, especially not local media, praised King Tiger for his efforts. No one wore King Tiger shirts in Denver.
"Wong's Hardware, owned by Lightning Wong, me. If you live in Flushing, Queens and need hardware."
Lightning Wong stood in front of his store looking unhappy to have to film this commercial. The Big Axe had told Andrea that when Lightning Wong first started at Cup, marketing had tried to brand him Thunderbolt, but he absolutely hated it. They tried to sell him on Lightning Dragon, and he asked if they threw in the dragon part because he was Chinese. Ms. Oh would not let him go by his full legal name, so he said something along the lines of,
"My name is Wong, and I turn into lightning, so I find Lightning Wong acceptable."
Just as she was thinking about him, the Big Axe appeared on screen. Look at him lifting that used car above his head. Look at him cutting the word prices in half with an animated version of his axe. Pretty impressive, the Big Axe. Pretty impressive. What was he doing right now? This was a bad idea, but it had been a bad idea for 5 of the last 7 nights. She dialed and waited as she listened to the ring.
"I am the Big Axe," she heard him say.
"It's so weird you answer your phone that way," she said.
"It's weird that you're calling this late."
"Fair. Do you want to come over and watch late night TV at my apartment?" She really did want to watch television. Maybe that was all.
Nope.
5 of the last 7 nights begged to differ.
"I do, but the last time I came over, I could not fit on any of the furniture and had to sit on the floor."
"Seems like things worked out well for you, regardless." He paused for a moment and considered.
"I have cable, and there's a special on Discovery about Rasputin."
"I love Rasputin." She really did. "By the time I get over there, it will probably be over, though."
"I paused it on the DVR an hour ago when I saw it was on, anticipating this phone call."
She tried not to smile, but she could not help herself. "You really know the way to a girl's heart."
"Also, I bought popcorn. I'll come pick you up in the Axe-mobile."
During certain periods of Andrea's life, she had been driven by big questions. Why were we here? Could one person make a difference in this world? Is there such a thing as free will? After early successes learning Ms. O's coffee preferences, she had become preoccupied with one question. Whom should she allow in to see Ms. O? It seemed as though everyone needed her boss for something. Meeting requests flooded her inbox, and several times a day someone leaned in through the door and asked if Ms. O had a sec to chat. The quest to plan Ms. O's meetings would take all of her intellectual powers. To begin, she would need to find a measurable. With the coffee, it had been simple. She could record which cup Ms. O had chosen, how much she drank, and when. Easy enough. But Ms. O did not drink visitors to her office, so that did not help. Worse yet, she never said, "I was satisfied with that person being admitted." Or, "I am 65% unhappy that I had to talk to that person." She also would never turn someone away, although she would often make them wait. Waiting time, however, had so many confounding variables. Possibly she really did have important work that she had to finish at that very moment. Perhaps she sensed the person outside might need a moment to cool down before entering. She would never say her reasons. But she did stare. Sometimes when Andrea told Ms. O someone wished to speak with her, she would give a quick glance. Other times, she would give a long, hard stare. She could record the length of the stare and use that as her dependent variable in this experiment. Andrea was looking to study two independent variables, A, the type of meeting requested, and B, the position in the company's hierarchy of the employee requesting the meeting. Andrea broke up the type of meeting request into 7 different categories, which she organized by color for coding purposes. Red, urgent, lives or money at risk. Orange, important, time-sensitive matter. Yellow, great idea. Green, just checking in. Blue, people upset with their supervisors. Indigo, general advice seekers. Violet, people who felt they deserved more. She found using the color coding system useful. Rather than enter a description of the meeting into her spreadsheet, she changed the cell with the meeting in it to match its color code. In the adjoining cell, she entered the number of steps away the employee was from Ms. O based on CUP's organizational chart. She decided on this approach because not only would the person's relative status in the company matter, but also the relevance to Ms. O. A marketing intern was more steps from her boss than an operations intern, for instance. The next step would be to run initial trials, but she saw one pitfall. If she just let everyone in, Ms. O might become frustrated as the day went on. Would she be able to tell if a solid 6-second stare was the result of letting in the wrong person at the wrong time or the accumulated displeasure after 6 similar events? Also, she could be fired, and Ms. O would need to explain to her next administrative assistant that they should never ask questions or run incredibly annoying experiments. She would have to create another column in the spreadsheet for how many meetings had preceded each one and make sure not to overdo the trials. After a few days of recording data, she found that position within the organizational chart had shown no positive or negative relationship with the duration of Ms. O's stare. The type of request, however, showed very clear results. Unsurprisingly, she received almost no stare when announcing someone with a red, urgent request. When Vic Jackson, traffic and distribution associate, explained that their Washington State-based superhero Fright Biker had disappeared into Mount St. Helens while fighting Scumlord, Andrea let him right in, and Ms. O did not even lock eyes with her. When Asan Ahmed from IT swung by to just to check in, 10-second stare. When Cheryl O'Hara from marketing needed to talk about how her boss disrespected her, 5-second stare. She now had a useful chart showing the stare lengths for each category. All this data, however, only looked at Ms. O's reaction when she immediately informed her of the requested meeting. She next had to measure the stare relative to how long she kept the person waiting. Andrea could immediately contact Ms. O, ask the person to wait for a period of time, or schedule a meeting for later in the day. The entirety of her experiment took 25 work days, not including one when she had a minor panic attack that she had given up on her dream and then spent the rest of the day ignoring her project and trying to plan how to get out of this job, move to Europe, finish her novel, and then devote the rest of her life to philanthropic work that would be celebrated for generations. That day was her only setback. Otherwise, the results were clear and useful. Thus, she knew what to do when the hero formerly known as Defendroid, a defense robot designed and created by CUP, who had retired to a small town in Alabama, became so popular they elected him to office and changed his name to Robot Mayor, came to visit. He was admitted after she finished a conference call. No stare. Now, with King Tiger sitting in front of her, she entered his request into her spreadsheet, changed the color to violet for people who felt they deserved more, and let him wait. And wait. King Tiger stood a hair over 7 feet tall, but right now he was sitting and reading an expired issue of an entertainment magazine he had no interest in. Unlike Bronx Bull, King Tiger possessed a completely animal face, indistinguishable from that of his namesake creature. King Tiger also dressed far better, appearing in fine suits even when fighting. In further contrast, Bronx Bull was a Hume, born human and enhanced through surgery. But King Tiger had never asked for this life. Born in Mumbai, King Tiger came into the world as a human baby with orange, black, and white fur.
"Are you quite certain that Miss O knows I am waiting here?"
King Tiger asked in his impeccably polite Indian-British accent. Andrea could only assume King Tiger's early life could not have been pleasant. Poor, alone, a tiger. Had he fought his way up through underground fight clubs? Had he served as an enforcer for a crime boss? Had he worked in an especially dangerous call center? Were all of her guesses of his past based on cultural stereotypes and award-winning movies? Perhaps.
"I am quite certain that she is making me wait here on purpose."
"We have coffee," Andrea offered.
"I am King Tiger, defender of the people, scourge of evil."
"I am Andrea, offerer of coffee."
"Tea. You know I drink tea."
"We only have coffee." Another few minutes passed, and Andrea opened the door to Ms. O's office and said, "King Tiger is outside. He would like to discuss his contract." "How long has he been here?" Ms. O asked. 35 minutes. No stare. Ms. O pushed open the door and threw her hands in the air. "Oh, King Tiger, how rude am I? Sorry, there have just been so many fires popping up and so darn few firemen. Come on in. Do you mind if Andrea joins to take notes?"
"Yes, very well."
King Tiger rose to his full height and strode into the office in his perfectly fitting charcoal gray suit. Andrea set her out-of-office message and joined Ms. O inside. Since she first interviewed, she had come to notice the subtle touches of Ms. O's office. No pictures of family, no diplomas. She still wondered about the black-and-white drawing of the man riding a bronco. "King Tiger, it is always a pleasure to meet with our best and most powerful superhero. How is the day treating you?"
"Defenders of Earth has quite generously offered to increase my salary by 25%.
Miss O feigned confusion. "Why would they pay you more to work for us?"
"You know very well what I'm saying. They have offered me a 25% raise if I join them. What can you offer?"
Miss O's jaw dropped in feigned shock and confusion. "What is Defenders of Earth? Would you be a superhero, or is that some kind of office supply store?" In addition to super strength, King Tiger also possessed unparalleled patience.
"Miss O, we are both aware of Defenders of Earth, a large superhero corporation."
"Where? Arizona?"
"Yes, they have the contract for every county in Arizona."
"You going to move your parents to Arizona? Last time I saw Jay and Gita, they loved that house in Jackson Heights and never wanted to leave. Said they love being so close to you and the kids. They are a wonderful couple, by the way."
"I wouldn't have to work in Arizona. They are expanding into many new markets."
Ms. O puzzled over this. "New Mexico?"
"They have some counties east of the Mississippi, Miss O."
"Okay, so you came in to tell me you're quitting to go work for Defensive of the Planet."
You know the name is Defenders of Earth, and that is not what I'm saying.
Miss O threw her hands in the air. Then, KT, you're going to have to make it real clear what you're saying, because I'm more confused than a horse filing his tax return.
I have been offered a 25% increase in salary and other benefits from Defenders of Earth, and I would like to hear your counteroffer.
My counteroffer? Andrea, are you taking notes on all this? Andrea looked up from her tablet and answered, Yes, Miss O. King Tiger wants more money, or he will force his parents to move. King Tiger took a calm breath.
My parents can live where it pleases them, but I need to make a financial decision.
Miss O nodded. Right. So you are asking if I will match their offer?
Precisely.
Hell, KT, I can beat it. I can offer you the chance to save the world, get on the cover of every magazine, and get your face on a damn cereal box. I'm sure Deflators of the Earth will let you fight the super-intelligent cactus they got out in Tempe or whatever the hell. But I think I got a pretty good offer.
I have worked for this company for 13 years. I have made untold sums for you and whoever owns this place. I have been loyal to a fault. And now it is time for the company to, as it were, step up to the proverbial plate.
Andrea, he just made a baseball reference for me. God bless him. Listen, King Tiger, let's cut the crap, as it were. Other companies are trying to poach. No offense with the term poach, because I know you're a tiger, and you hate that word. But they're trying to poach our employees because they want us to have to subcontract them at a premium because of the bind we're in with this egg. They'll hire you away, then in a couple months they'll fire you.
They have guaranteed my salary for a period of 1 year.
How long's that company been around?
Ms. O, perhaps we can both cut the crap and you tell me.
They've been in business 6 months. As soon as they finish subcontracting you back out to me, or if I tell them to shove it and they find out they won't make any money off you, they can declare bankruptcy and reform under some new name like Defenders of Earth.
That is there.
Now, I'm about as tired as a mule on moving day, so I'll cut this short. They offered you 15%, not 25, and you're too smart not to see the trap they're setting for you.
Always ahead of the game. What else do you know?
I know you're a damn prideful, stubborn tiger, and you're probably thinking you'll quit on principle if I don't give you what you deserve, 'cause you know Superbia, or someone else will hire you and you take a pay cut rather than be disrespected.
Well, here we are then.
Ms. O relaxed back into her chair. Andrea, you getting this? Andrea continued typing into her tablet and said, Yes, 5% raise and an extra vacation day, and he'll agree to sign a non-compete agreement stating he won't work for another superhero company for a period of 1 year after the end of his employment at CUP. Ms. O clapped twice. Let us pray that day never comes. So we're good, right?
A pleasure as always, Ms. O.
King Tiger rose, nodded deferentially, and turned toward the door. In the process, his tail just barely brushed Andrea's hair in a manner that had to be on purpose. He exited, and the door closed behind him at the exact appropriate speed. Ms. O pointed at Andrea and held the finger for a few seconds. Write me a draft of an email to send to all the other superheroes, informing them that they're required to sign a non-compete, and in appreciation, we'll be giving them a 5% salary increase and an extra vacation day. Andrea smiled. Composed it for you during the meeting, and it's saved in your drafts. Getting better at this, Andrea Vernon. Getting better. Chapter 10. Javier Oscar, VP of Marketing and Public Relations.
We need a freezer.
What they need is to wear a cup logo. The first speaker, King Tiger, sounded just as adamant as the second, VP of Marketing and Public Relations, Javier Oscar. The group stood under the glowing egg, which looked a little larger to Andrea than it had during her last visit.
Y'all know I have an office, right? Squirrel can't gather nuts for winter if he's always cleaning the outhouse.
Ms. O was displeased to have to go back to Yankee Stadium. Now standing right on top of home plate, she expressed that displeasure with piercing eye contact to everyone present, one by one.
Look at me, said Javier, dressed in a red cup polo and black slacks. I am here representing our company, and what am I wearing? A cup logo. This is branding. These individuals are the outward-facing side of the company, the ones about to save the world. There are hundreds of reporters and photographers around, and none of them are wearing the logo.
Javier's hair had gone white, and wrinkles had invaded his skin. But he kept a youthful haircut and wore brand new sneakers, as if to make entirely clear that he still liked to party. One by one, Ms. O pivoted to Senora Fuego, the Big Axe, Rabbi Diamond, Inspector Well Actually, Lightning Wong, and King Tiger, and waited for an answer. Lightning Wong did not look up as he worked on a crossword puzzle. Somewhere around were Kitchen Sink and its controller, Cosmina. But she had refused to speak to Andrea since the latter had climbed inside her baby. Ms. O said she would get over it, but Andrea wondered if anyone who had ever accused anyone else of climbing inside their baby had ever gotten over it. Senora Fuego finally spoke up.
Rabbi Diamond, what happens if the egg opens on a Saturday?
I will check scripture, but I'm pretty certain I can work on Shabbat to preserve the world the Lord created, but I'll check.
King Tiger cut in before Ms. O could erupt.
If I may, let me begin by saying we all love our company. You may recall that I wore a cup running shirt when I completed the New York Marathon. I believe we as a group feel a bit, shall we say, foolish, wearing a corporate logo while battling for the future of humanity.
Y'all feel silly cashing the checks? Does that make you feel like superhero sellouts?
Ms. O shot back.
A point we readily concede.
King Tiger wore a pinstripe suit today, appropriate for Yankee Stadium, Andrea noted. Behind him stood the Big Axe in his normal overalls and plaid shirt, Rabbi Diamond in his black suit and yarmulke, Senora Fuego in yoga pants and a tight Lightning Wong t-shirt, Lightning Wong in blue slacks and a short-sleeve button-up, and Inspector Well Actually in an ill-fitting thrift shop suit and that damn fedora. King Tiger considered his next words carefully.
It feels as though we're putting the company above the import of the effort itself. Would it not be beneficial to show humility and selflessness in the darkest moment?
Nope,
answered Ms. O.
None of the shirts or jumpsuits you give us ever fit right, added the Big Axe.
They make me look pregnant,
added Senora Fuego. Ms. O turned back to Javier. What can you get here with a cup logo that fits? Javier was not ready for this question.
First, all of the outfits were custom designed and should fit perfectly.
All mine are ripped, said the Big Axe.
They make me look pregnant, repeated Senora Fuego.
Well,
Javier started, but then paused.
We have a lot of cup frisbees.
All of the superheroes clapped mockingly, even Lightning Wong, who paused from his crossword.
I must admit, said King Tiger, if we could destroy the egg and its contents with a cup frisbee, it would be great for publicity.
I could get a cup tattoo on my butt, if that would help, the Big Axe offered.
Yes, but then who would see it?
Asked Ms. O. Andrea had an answer to that, but kept her mouth shut. Then she paused to consider that Ms. O might have looked at her for a moment. What if she knew? What if both their jobs were in danger? God, that made it super hot. There was definitely something wrong with her.
Maybe a cupcake?
Javier offered.
Did you just say cupcake?
Señora Fuego asked.
No, a cape with a cup logo on it.
Señora Fuego would have none of it.
Listen, I grew up here in the South Bronx. I got people here. I show up wearing a cape, I'll never hear the end of it.
Ms. O turned to Andrea. Give me 5 ideas. Cup robes they can walk in wearing and remove them like boxers before a match. A local kid waving a cup flag next to them. Cup helmets, all of them can eat from cup lunchboxes, or we drive them here in a cup van. Andrea threw out immediately. She had anticipated this question.
Van works, said Ms. O. Javier, get a van that all of them will fit in, get someone to paint a cup logo on it, and all of you take the van whenever you travel together. I'll get buses with the cup logo when all of the other soups get in. Now, tell me about the freezer.
Very well, began King Tiger. We need a freezer.
By this, he meant someone who could freeze objects with their touch or shoot ice out of their person.
Lightning Wong is going to strike first once the egg opens. The big axe and I are the brute strength on the ground. Kitchen Sink will provide rear support, and Señora Fuego will be in a position to finish it off with fire. But if cold is the weakness of our nemesis, then we will be unable to exploit that advantage. Considering how quickly everything is likely to happen, a freezer could at least slow it down, and we do not have any such superheroes at Cup at present.
Lightning Wong nodded. Yes, he said. Ms. O stood there silently for a few minutes. Ice Beast freelances, but she refuses to go this far south. Frozen Fury works for Superbia, and they won't let him go. Mr. Ice Guy died. Señora Fuego laughed.
I guess you could say...
No!
The big axe interrupted. He named himself that just so people would make this joke. I hate this joke, and I have heard it 40 times since he died.
Ignoring him, Señora Fuego finished.
No more Mr. Ice Guy! Chill out, the big axe. You get all huffy and puffy sometimes. You need a good woman to take care of you.
Did Andrea make a face? She just made a face. Señora Fuego caught her. Crap, that was bad. So much danger and excitement. How quickly could she get him alone? She was really going to break that man's heart.
There's no one we can get,
Ms. O concluded.
Well, actually, there is one person you could get,
piped in Inspector Well Actually, who had been silent up to now.
But he's in prison.
He's good, said the big axe.
We all know he's not the most dependable person, and we remember what he did,
admitted Señora Fuego.
He would, however, be a tremendous asset for us here,
argued King Tiger. Ms. O obviously hated this idea.
Fine. But in exchange, y'all are going to finally start using our database, and I don't want to hear any groans or huffs.
The sound of a helicopter overhead broke up their conversation, and an ominous shadow appeared on the field. The team immediately jumped into action as King Tiger leapt up onto the big axe's shoulders, ready for attack. Flames formed around Señora Fuego's hands, and her skin turned bright orange, nearly yellow. The flames reflected off Rabbi Diamond, who had his hands up in the air, ready to use his telekinesis. Lightning Wong put his crossword puzzle down on the ground, and Inspector Well Actually ran to the visiting team's dugout. Even Kitchen Sink charged out from the bullpen into the outfield.
I have come to steal, not to beg. I have come for what I deserve. The egg! The egg! The egg!
Rhymed out from above.
The vulture!
Yelled King Tiger. A vulture-shaped helicopter descended rapidly, and with it, a mechanical claw, almost identical to a claw Andrea would expect in a machine at an arcade that a kid would use to try to pick up a stuffed animal. It was larger than the one in an arcade, but ridiculously undersized for picking up the egg.
"Go, Lightning Wong,"
King Tiger said calmly, and in a moment, a bolt of lightning shot up at the helicopter. Just as quickly, the helicopter free-fell to the ground. A crash seemed imminent, but then the helicopter froze and hung in mid-air. Andrea saw Rabbi Diamond pointing the palm of his hand toward the craft. As he lowered his hand, so followed the helicopter, slowly and safely to the ground. A man dressed in an elaborate vulture costume staggered out and collapsed. King Tiger pounced on top of him and growled, while the big axe chopped the helicopter into two pieces with one mighty swing. He gave a wink to Andrea.
"What the hell were you even doing?"
Señora Fuego asked the vulture, who looked like a normal, boring banker type with his vulture helmet removed.
"I don't know, man. I just thought I would steal the egg."
"Why?" she asked. "What would you have done with it?"
"I don't know, lady. It just seemed cool."
Ms. O had lost interest already. Andrea followed her as she headed toward the exit.
"Andrea, we gotta go get permafrost. So we got something in common with that idiot vulture back there. We're going to a super prison."
Andrea and Ms. O exited the stadium onto River Avenue. The crowds had remained in the thousands, still maintaining a friendly relationship with the NYPD officers keeping them a safe distance from the stadium. A crowd of 20 or 30 young men wearing Yankees hats and shirts had pushed to the front of the closest barricade carrying signs with messages such as, "Let them play," and "Yankees, champions of Earth." They booed loudly as Andrea and Ms. O passed.
"Can you just blow up the damn egg already?" demanded one man.
"We're sick of going to Queens for games," yelled another.
Ms. O ignored them and directed Andrea to the car waiting for them. As they stepped in, Andrea's phone buzzed. A message from Señora Fuego read,
"Hey, girl, let's talk. Lunch?"
Chapter 11, Permafrost, Interviewee. Andrea's imagination painted the following picture of a prison for supercriminals. A massive transparent pyramid suspended by cable over an active volcano. Laser weapons aimed constantly at the structure and explosive charges laid by the cables, ready to cut loose the monsters inside at the slightest hint of danger. Each ascending layer contained increasingly dastardly villains until the apex, where a single being of immense power and evil was strapped down at all times and kept away from anyone who could fall victim to his mind bombs or murder breath. How would the guy on the top use the bathroom if he was held down all the time? Ms. O asked after Andrea explained the imagined layout. Andrea had no answer. The actual prison, Cromwell Penitentiary for Extra-Human Criminals in Columbia County, New York, looked very similar to a normal prison. Taller walls, auto turrets surrounding the entire exterior, and the dozens of drones flying overhead set it apart. Also, it was patrolled by attack robots with flamethrowers, but other than that, just a normal prison.
"This is where the real money's at," Ms. O said as they went through scanning. "The companies that run super prisons get more money than the mayor before he judges the pie contest. For some reason, the government sees a conflict of interest for a company that gets paid to fight supervillains to also get paid to imprison them."
"Wouldn't be much incentive to keep them locked up since we'd need them out there to get paid to fight them," Andrea posited.
"Can't run the ocean and the seafood restaurant, I suppose."
A frazzled-looking man in coffee-stained gray pants and coffee-stained blue shirt met them as they passed security.
"Ms. O, nice to meet you. Warden Oster."
His eyes scanned up, down, back, forth, and all around. He had lost most of his hair, with gray strays waving back and forth under the air conditioner, as if they were signaling to the other few survivors, "Hey, I'm still here. I don't know how much longer I can last, and I don't think any help is coming." "Nice to meet you, Warden. How are you today?" Warden Oster shook her hand.
"I'm horrible. I run a prison for supercriminals. They could kill me at any moment. One must be some kind of animal controller guy, 'cause everywhere I go, puppies attack me. Only puppies. You would think that would be better than full-sized dogs, but it is crushing to have every puppy want to attack you. I love puppies. Also, I'm pretty sure one of the inmates has invaded my mind and comes with me everywhere I go. He's here now. I can feel him. How are you?"
"Did you hear from the governor?" Ms. O asked.
"Yes, ma'am. We got all the paperwork filed, and we can release Permafrost as soon as he's done."
"Done with what?" Escorted by two robots with chainsaws for left arms and machine guns for right arms, Warden Oster guided them through a corridor to the elevator, which descended 14 floors below ground. Down a narrow hallway, he turned into a meeting room with half a dozen teenage boys sitting on folding chairs. Facing them were four inmates who stood against a concrete wall, glaring straight ahead. Andrea recognized Permafrost, a rather unremarkable-looking middle-aged man with a goatee to hide a weak chin. In this moment, Andrea realized how judgy she was about people's facial hair. Ms. O leaned over to whisper to Andrea, "The one with the human body and the orca head is Killer Orca. The guy with the giant bulges on either side of his head is Triple Brain. I'm pretty sure the giant muscular one is Armed Conflict, but I can't tell yet." Warden Oster stood in front of the young men.
"I understand that all of you have been kicked out of Commodore Schaefer's School for Enhanced Ability Humans and Aliens, and now all of you are on the verge of failing out of New York Remedial School for Superhuman Potential. Some of you have already been arrested. You're on a path that ends here. These gentlemen have given up their time to prepare you for what life will be like if you don't turn it around."
"You think you're tough?"
screamed the one who might be Armed Conflict to the green-skinned boy nearest him. The boy could not return eye contact.
I don't know, man."
"Ha! I can turn my arms into weapons!"
Ms. O whispered, "Yes, definitely Armed Conflict," into Andrea's ear. Armed Conflict's arms transformed into two war hammers, and he laughed maniacally.
"I will smash you! You think you can make it at Cromwell? You think you can stand up to me? Come on, who's the tough guy?"
One of the young men expelled air in a way that displeased Armed Conflict.
"I found him! This is the tough guy! What's your power?"
The kid, maybe 16 and pimple-faced, tried to sound confident, but his voice dropped in and out as he answered,
"I can break glass with my mind."
"I can break punks with my..."
"Sorry if you're uncomfortable with all this," Ms. O whispered to Andrea.
"I'm fine, but thank you," Andrea responded. She had worried before coming here that she might run into Bronx Bull, whom Connor Geis had turned over to the authorities, but she had remembered that Bronx Bull had never seen her face, and that he was a dehorned man bull, so they probably would not bring him out to try to intimidate teenagers. Also, she was not certain whether Bronx Bull would be awaiting trial. Did superheroes and supervillains have the same experience with the justice system? Was Bronx Bull being held at Rikers Island until his arraignment?
"What are you in for? Robbed a liquor store. You? Tried to gore a salesman at a donut shop until a robot beat me up."
Triple Brain had risen.
All of you think you're tough. Well, I have three brains.
He spoke with a mischievous falsetto voice.
Three? How many brains do you have?
Far less frightened of Triple Brain, who was the smallest person in the room and had twig-like arms that did not transform into anything, a shaggy-haired boy quipped,
Man, I don't even need a brain to fight you.
A piercing, maniacal laugh broke out of Triple Brain.
I have three brains. I grew them in my lab and put them inside my own brain. Three brains. What can you do?
Yo, I'm fast. I can run a 100-yard dash in less than a second.
I have three brains. Your speed will get you nowhere fast except the prison morgue.
The kid threw back his chair to prove what his speed can do, and instantly he was on the ground. He had moved so fast, Andrea had not even seen the kid move, but Triple Brain had still tripped him and sent him tumbling to the floor.
I have three brains. I know exactly where you'd be. I will own you in here. Triple Brain will own you.
Armed conflict got into the face of the telekinetic glass breaker.
I was once like you. I thought I was real cool. I can make my arms into axes, guns, and swords. I thought no one would ever take me down. So I started skipping school, hanging out with other muters who just wanted to make the world bleed. Started small, robbing banks, taking the mayor hostage, and sending in a shapeshifter in his place to run the city government. But it all fell apart. I got in over my head. I also started doing a lot of meth, and that's how I ended up here.
Killer Orca shrieked,
I will eat you!
Armed Conflict's voice dropped to just above a whisper.
But I don't want that for you. I don't want you to be like me. I don't want to see this place ruin you. You still have a chance. You got a chance until you don't. And then you're stuck here forever.
On cue, Permafrost shot ice out of his hands that coated each boy's feet and sealed him to the floor. They shook and struggled, but none could get free. He spoke in a thick Russian accent.
It's good to meet you. I wait for you. I can leave here and come back for later. We become best friends.
Warden Oster stepped forward with a smile.
Don't worry, boys. We'll get you right out of this and get you on the bus back.
I will eat you!
Killer Orca shrieked. Once all of the boys had been de-iced and removed from the room, Warden Oster left Andrea and Ms. O alone with Permafrost.
Boys, just boys. Mused Permafrost. They have no idea what they do. Who is girl? Sean dead?
Yes, this is my new administrative assistant, Andrea.
It's a pleasure, said Andrea. I'd shake your hand, but I'm not sure if it would freeze off or not.
He's smart, girl. No freeze, I can control. Not like Mr. Ice Guy, always freezing. Had to build special suit.
He's dead, Miss O informed him.
Eh? No more Mr. Ice Guy.
Gonna keep hearing that one, Miss O said.
So, you come here. You want me for job, no?
Miss O nodded. I called the governor, who understood that releasing you would be beneficial to the survival of the human race.
I blush.
So? Are you in or out?
I have 4 months left on sentence. You are the one who put me in here.
Permafrost's entire demeanor changed. He lost his smile and cheer.
You were a danger.
Gambling!
You bet on battles between superheroes and supervillains, Ms. O said. That is completely illegal. And you bet against King Tiger! Your supervisor. Sheep can't root for the farmer to slide under the tractor.
One bit, no danger. Villains in here who blow up cities, kill world leaders, steal skyscrapers. Permafrost is small potato.
Permafrost seemed frustrated, and ice started to surround his hands. Ain't you just the hawk who dives for mice and gets shot by the hunter? Ms. O asked.
No clue. No clue any of these things you say. Fine, I go. But I want one of chairs that massages.
The hell do you want a massage chair for?
Always want.
Permafrost smiled again.
Never felt could afford. Now can make demands. Probably later think of better things and regret missing chance, but I want chair.
Fine. And they had a freezer. Chapter 12. Essen Ahmed, IT Project Manager. Essen Ahmed, IT Project Manager, looked like a Pakistani Viking. Tall and broad-shouldered, his long, thick hair flowed well down below his collar, and a glorious beard raced it down the other side. This Viking, it seemed, did not have a horn helmet or armor, but a T-shirt for a video game Andrea had never heard of, and baggy jeans. Cup was business casual, but the IT department floated above the dress code.
Hey, gang, Essen began. This is your training for our database system, CupNet. It should be very straightforward. I'm not sure why your hand is up, as we've yet to discuss any information.
We are here under protest, King Tiger said. We agreed to do this, but it is a waste of our time with the looming battle against the unknown evil that lurks inside the egg and that speeds toward our planet from a galaxy unknown.
The big axe, Senora Fuego, Cosmina, Rabbi Diamond, Lightning Wong, and the newly free Permafrost nodded in agreement. Inspector Well actually had been excused, as he was permanently banned from the IT department because they refused to put up with his garbage. The assembled superheroes sat in front of their desktop displays, all with disapproving frowns as though the waiter had brought them soup with a live pigeon in it. Essen nodded as though he might genuinely believe that there might be a more important group of employees at CUP than IT.
I am aware I still have to show you the PowerPoint presentation.
Andrea sat at the conference table with the assembled superheroes, charged with keeping them in the room and on task. Andrea herself had no power, but she was a reminder of Ms. O. She hoped that would be enough.
All right. Essen continued. You can see the login information on the screen. Please make sure not to let anyone know your password, as the contents of CupNet could be used to destroy all of the United States. Go ahead and log in on your computers.
Everyone rolled their chairs up to their workstations. The big axe's giant keyboard more resembled a log than anything technical, and Andrea guessed it was custom-made. As Essen continued speaking, each superhero made random mouse movements and keystrokes to look as though they were doing something productive.
So, continued Essen, let's start with the most basic task, recording an event.
I'm the Big Axe. I don't have events, said the Big Axe. I fight evil.
Glad you said that, said Essen. Because that is a type of event. So, if all of you will click on Record an Event, you'll see there is a drop-down menu. You can select that the event was a confrontation, rescue, sales call, sales conference, and a few others.
Senora Fuego asked,
So, when I saved Madison Square Garden from the Brawler Baller, that was a confrontation?
Yes, exactly. Essen said with excitement that one of them seemed to care.
And when I didn't log that, Madison Square Garden was destroyed and Brawler Baller came back from the dead, right?
Essen put his head in his hands. No, but someone else had to log it for you, and they had to hound you to get the information for it. How long did the fight last? How dead was Brawler Baller? Completely dead or still alive enough that another villain could use his body to reanimate him as a zombie of his former self? What were the details of the fight?
Good. Is the training over?
Asked Lightning Wong. No, said Essen. Lightning Wong took out a crossword puzzle, which Andrea snatched from him. Unfortunately, he had already started to fill it out, and Andrea realized, too late, she was looking at that day's New York Times crossword, and now she had spoiled it for herself. Well played, Lightning Wong.
You guys want to save lives, right?
Asked an increasingly defensive Essen.
Great. Properly logging your activities saves lives and kills bad guys.
Axes are better, said the big axe.
Sure, said Essen. But we still need a record. You don't have to worry about the column for amount of property damage incurred. Finance sends us that info. But we need to be able to keep track of the work being done. King Tiger, you fought bombed on Broadway, correct?
Indeed I did, King Tiger said.
And you defeated him, but he did manage to escape in the end. Now, if he shows up in New Orleans and we have to send out Lord and Lady Alligator to fight him, they'll need to look at your notes to see what worked against him. I don't want to be too dramatic, but if you don't fill out your reports precisely, you are killing your colleagues. If you are cool with murdering your friends, please continue to ignore our database.
King Tiger examined the faces of his team and said,
We're willing to take our chances. We are bore paperwork.
Too bad, because I am going to continue to explain it, said Essen. Now, here's a good example. Cosmina, the other day, you had a fight with Bronx Bull.
Cosmina stood up immediately and glared at Essen.
No, it was not me. It was a usurper. I cannot stand to be in this room any longer.
She turned and attempted to make a dramatic exit. When she pushed on the door, however, it was locked.
We are caged in.
That was me, admitted Andrea. Ms. O tasked me with keeping all of you in this room until the training was complete, so I locked the door.
Back in prison, said Permafrost.
Ha! Said Senora Fuego. Unless the door is made of something that is impervious to lightning, heat, axes, and tiger claws, I think it's outmatched.
True, said Andrea. Go ahead and break it if you'd like to leave early. You're all fearless, so I'm sure one of you is willing to explain to Ms. O why you broke her door. Her beloved door. I also have the key on me if one of you wants to take it off Ms. O's administrative assistant. No one moved. Great. Now, all of you, listen to Essen. Cosmina took bitter steps back to her chair and sat. All of the superheroes quietly turned their gaze to Essen's PowerPoint presentation. The big axe surreptitiously made eye contact with Andrea and mouthed, Hot. Andrea winked and mouthed, Tonight.
I'm losing my freaking mind here, Ms. O.
Teresa DeMarco was not having a good day. As manager of traffic and distribution, it was her job to move superheroes around the country to their destinations. Her department took the calls for assistance and routed the appropriate personnel.
This is what happens. The sales reps go out and overpromise, and then I'm stuck moving heaven and earth. Hundreds of soups? We got 173 total in the whole company, spread across the whole country.
Teresa had only ever worked for CUP, starting as a receptionist in her early 20s and working her way up through various departments. She took great pride in her 3 decades of experience at the company. Andrea had never seen her not wearing a CUP polo and drinking coffee from a CUP cup. It had not been all butterflies and rainbows for Teresa. Tarantulas kidnapped her and held her hostage in his web during her first week at work. After that, her house was eaten,
She was framed for murder, and she was abducted by aliens 3 times. 2 of the kidnappings were by evil extraterrestrials, but the last had been a sincere accident by a benevolent race traveling the universe on a quest for knowledge, and she was returned 3 weeks later. She spoke glowingly of the Neolik race, and especially their leader, Neolik, to the point that rumors still flew around the office nearly 20 years later about why it took so long for Teresa to return. In spite of the drama she had endured, Teresa never complained about her own suffering at the hands of supervillains, even as she lamented improperly filed paperwork. Teresa loved Cup, and she loved her family. Nothing pleased her more than bragging that all 4 of her sons, Tony, Gino, Polly, and Neodaz, worked for Cup as well. Teresa continued, "And I got finance telling me I can't leave some counties and states without a superhero within a certain distance because of our contracts. I need 4 superheroes literally inside Los Angeles County at all times, or we have to pay a severe penalty. And I had to send Mecha Beowulf and Hard Scrabble there to assist because Neat Freak has been threatening to blow up Hollywood." Ms. O continued to wait. Teresa continued, "I can move Lava Man out of North Dakota and send him here, but then I've got to outsource the work to a local company. And what happens if the Rustler returns and starts creating those cow tornadoes again? They will not be happy with us if they find out we left them in the hands of some random podunk local shop. Also, some places specifically wrote into our contract that any soup has to be a full-time Cup employee. So if we send someone out there, we have to make sure they get health care and full benefits. I haven't even gotten to how we get them here. We have 13 attack ships, but we also need to send all of their equipment. Otherwise, Mecha Beowulf is going to look real silly. I could send Deep Cowboy, but he just spouts nihilist philosophy until the villains fail to see a point in the struggle. So he might be wasted in this fight." Ms. O looked down at her watch. Teresa continued, "Fine. I can get you 102 soups. You're going to lose a ton of money paying local companies to babysit for us, and every day they're here is going to make it worse. If it's short notice, half of them are going to have to fly commercial. I made a list arranging them by size. I figured the biggest get priority on the attack ships. Oh, 103, since you got permafrost. 104, if you want to count teleporter Joe, but that seems like fudging." "Thanks, T," Ms. O said. "You're a miracle worker." "You really think we're going to need all these soups?" "We told the client we would get them, so yes, we need them. Do we need this many to save the world? Maybe. Might take more than that. But this is what we got." So, this must be how it felt for little baby cubs to wake up. Andrea, 5'3", woke up as Little Spoon to Big Axe's Big Spoon. His massive left arm draped over her and pulled her into his mountainous chest. She had to get up soon to get over to her apartment to get ready for work. Lately, the Big Axe had been winning the battle of who would come over to the other's apartment. He always picked her up and dropped her off in the Axe-mobile, a custom-built, the Big Axe-sized truck with his axe painted on both sides. It was given to him as part of an endorsement deal. As far as Andrea could tell, he only used it to pick her up and drop her off. She imagined parking it in Manhattan could not be easy. Through the window, she could see light began to creep up. She could also see the axe to the right of the window. The rest of the apartment, with its necessarily high ceilings and the Big Axe-sized furniture, felt like some kind of forced perspective optical illusion. Except this one was also full of rock band and movie posters. The Big Axe also owned multiple video game systems and custom-made controllers for his giant hands. His left hand now was busy brushing through her hair.
"Sleep well?"
he asked. Yes. I am contractually obligated not to ask how you slept.
Good. Great.
You have a real boy apartment, the Big Axe.
If you want, I can let you have a drawer here for when you stay over. Maybe that will make it more womanly for you.